Yo, what's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Morning Yankee Show. It is Monday, April 6th, 2026. Hope everybody is doing well as we gear up for another week of Yankee baseball. Now, of course, off day today, A's are coming to town for a three-game set beginning on Tuesday, and we will be live tomorrow morning as well. Tuesday morning, we'll also have another episode of the Morning Yankee Show. Today's an off day. Tomorrow, though, another programming note, watch parties every single game of the A's series. That, of course, is on the main channel. Anyways, hope everybody is doing well as we get started for another week. Already, week three of the MLB season. And so far, it's been a good one for the Yankees. They enter today, the off day, 7-2, which is tied for the best record in baseball with the Dodgers and the Brewers. They have a three-game lead in the American League East. Now, you guys know I like to do my scoreboard watching. And we're going to talk about yesterday's loss where the Yankees failed to sweep the Marlins, end up only having to settle for 2 out of 3. But listen, I know the season has a long ways to go. And I'll be reminding myself, reminding everybody of that as we talk about things in this episode today. But it is worth noting the slow start, the very slow start the Toronto Blue Jays are off to. They just got swept by the Chicago White Sox. Shout out Munetaka Murakami. They're going to turn it around, and they've had a bad break so far on many levels with injuries. I always say, that ain't how I want to beat them. I want them to be healthy, so you know, best wishes to all their guys that are injury-plagued so far. But the bottom line is the Blue Jays have not had an ideal start to begin their season. For the most part, we have obviously a lot of season left, but these games count just as much as the ones at the end of the season. So a three-game lead, if anything, consider it a head start if you do still consider the teams to be on the same level, which is fair. You may still consider the Blue Jays to be better than the Yankees. I know, early to be having this conversation, but a three-game lead early is not insignificant by any means whatsoever. Red Sox are also struggling, but let's all put that in the rearview mirror because we definitely got to discuss yesterday's game, which in the early going really looked like it was going to be a Yankee victory on cruise control. You had the Ben Rice through and homer. Max Fried, despite the rain delay, he gave the Yankees a really solid 6 2/3 innings pitched. The bullpen, though, which we'll talk about in topic two, ended up faltering. That's ultimately why the Yankees dropped the series finale. But I do want to first things first discuss one of the more controversial things from Sunday's game, which is J.C. Escar pinch hitting instead of Paul Goldschmidt. Now, initially, when I saw that Escar was getting the nod over Goldie, my reaction was similar to everybody else's, which was, why aren't you pinch hitting Goldschmidt? And I still, no matter what I'm about to say here, can understand the frustration with the way it all played out yesterday. Again, we're going to talk about the bullpen, but keep in mind, the offense is not why we lost yesterday. The bullpen blew a lead. And it was a sloppy, wet game. More often than not, and I was posting this in my Yanks staff story, those games seemingly never end well for the Yankees. When it's like a sloppy, rain-delayed game, it always feels like they get off to a good start and then they end in heartbreak, which I'm not going to qualify yesterday as a heartbreaker, but it was frustrating. It really, really was for many reasons, but as for the J.C. Escar at bat, why did he pinch hit Escar instead of Goldschmidt? Well, it was Anthony Bender on the mound for the Marlins, and some of you may have heard the numbers on this by now, but there's always a reason, and that reason being right-handers against Bender hit 185, while lefties hit 264. Righties have a 545 OPS against Bender. Lefties have a 764 OPS. So there's a very stark, significant difference between the production and the likelihood of success against Bender being right-handed and being left-handed. Goldschmidt's, of course, a righty. Escara, a left-handed bat, the only one we had available off the bench. And there's more to this conversation we're going to have in come topic three. But the at-bat didn't go well. It was a three-pitch at-bat. The second pitch wasn't a strike, but whatever. The Yankees, by the way, terrible with challenges this series. Terrible. While the Marlins were really good. And, you know, that's a difference than what we saw the first few series. The Yankees were excellent at ABS, and I anticipate they will continue to be. Not the case this series. Anyways, Escar ends up striking out on three pitches. It was a pretty ugly at-bat. Was this the right decision? Ultimately, I think so. I think this was a valid decision, just with an unfortunate outcome. Now, I understand the argument of Paul Goldschmidt's a veteran. He would have put up a better at-bat. I don't disagree with that at all. Not at all. I think Goldschmidt absolutely would have put up the better at-bat. But better at-bat doesn't necessarily mean a successful at-bat. I mean, he could have fought, maybe not struck out. Say it's an 8-pitch at-bat, but the odds are, in all likelihood, it would still end up in Goldschmidt getting out, given the numbers against Bender. Now, listen, I'm not a crazy analytics guy. I think there's a middle ground to all this. Just like home runs are important, it's also important not to strike out. Fundamentals are important. There's a lot of new age stuff and the old view of the game that I think there's a good middle ground blend to both. In the case of this, yeah, would Goldschmidt have given the Yankees a better at-bat? I think so. But ultimately, we know how goalie performs against right-handers. With the exception of that 3-run homer in Seattle was off of George Kirby. That was awesome. But we know how he performs against righties. Not great. We know how Bender performs against right-handed hitters. Really well. I think the problem is more so the Yankees lack a lefty bat off the bench. And because of that, J.C. Escar was their best option. Now, the thought process is your pinch hitter. I like what Girardi was saying, where it's you want to be aggressive. And Escar did swing first pitch. It ultimately comes down to Escar is not the best option we should have off the bench when in need of a left-handed bat. And the hope was that first pitch swinging, he would have a better chance of squaring up the ball and driving in the game-tying run. Of course, that did not happen. Again, I can 100% understand the pushback on Goldie should have pinch hit. That was my initial thought too. But I understand why they pinch hit Escar. And one thing I want to note, people act like Escar is some scrub. He's really not. Offensively, I'm not saying he's going to ever get a consistent amount of playing time to be a worthwhile bat for us. But the dude did post, when he was in AAA playing consistently in 2024, he did post an OPS over 900. So in fairness, Escar is not just some, you know, plumber from Walmart that is stepping into the box just because he's left-handed. No, I mean, he's had some minor league track record of offensive success. We're really getting into the weeds now. The point is, I understand what Boone was thinking. Ultimately, if you pinch hit Goldschmidt, probably wasn't going to end well either. Was the at-bat maybe going to be a little bit better? Was it going to be a longer at-bat, a more professional at-bat? Yeah, 100%. I agree with that. But a more professional at-bat, in the end, likely in this case, results in the same outcome, which is, all right, maybe it's 7 or 8 pitches and it's a better looking, more visually pleasing end to the game. But in the end, all likelihood, Goldschmidt gets out too. So that's kind of where I'm at in regards to the pinch hitting discussion from last night. But again, and this will take us into what I really want to get into, my two biggest concerns so far, and there might even be three, but the reason we lost yesterday's game was because of the bullpen. And, you know, Jake Bird had been terrific so far this season. The Yankee bullpen entirely. I mean, entering this series, you look at the Yankees' first 5 games, they hit a .53 ERA out of the bullpen. Last 4 games, now a 6.59 ERA. Jake Bird didn't even record an out, allowed the go-ahead hit, 3 earned runs, 1 walk. Fernando Cruz, I know there's some talk about Boone took him out too early. I can hear that out as well, but ultimately, because the Yankees were avoiding Bednar and avoiding Duvall, they were trying to avoid Duvall. Bednar was certainly not available, but Jake Bird was getting to this game one way or another, and it ended up being in the top of the 7th, or the top of the 8th, rather, and he was just not good. Not good whatsoever. Does that mean Jake Bird is ass? No. He might be. He certainly was yesterday, but he was great prior to yesterday's outing, and he came in and was just not effective in the slightest. Here's Jake Bird on his outing, and then we'll continue this conversation.
You've been so solid to start the season. Why do you think things maybe got away from you a little bit when you came in?
I just need to be better about getting my breath and executing pitches. Just didn't do it right away. Had one get away from me after the walk, and then by then it's time to bear down, and I just didn't do my job.
What frustrates you the most about a night like tonight?
I gave him freebies. You should never, never, ever give freebies. That's not big league baseball, and it's just not good.
Did you feel off immediately? You had the walk, and then, as you mentioned, the hit batter.
No, just not a good day. Going to be better moving forward and try not to let this happen again.
Fair enough. That's all I need to say. Now, listen, Bird, could he be bad this year? Could he be a disappointment? 100%. So far, prior to yesterday's outing, he wasn't. I'm not going to make any takeaways from one bad outing outside of just that. He was bad, didn't do his job, and ultimately that's why we lost this game. Now, that is the box score reason. That is the in-game reason, but kind of the out-of-game reason. We got to talk about Cadwin Quest. Now, Luis Gil's returning on Friday for his season debut against Tampa Bay at the Trop. Rays are back in Tropicana Field, by the way, if you weren't aware. But we'll be there on Friday. Luis Gil will make his season debut. Cadwin Quest will be off the roster by then. But man, for a bullpen that has felt awfully short, particularly one man short, particularly over the last week or so, the Yankees still have yet to use Cade Winquest. And for those who don't know, Rule 5 draft pick from the Cardinals, Yankees like his stuff, but clearly not enough to use him in a game. Now, he did warm up yesterday, never got in, but I know he's gone on Friday, but I mean, listen, if you're going to lose him anyways, unless you were to purchase the rights from the Cardinals to keep him, for those who don't know, like with the Rule 5, when you take a player, they got to stay on your 26-man roster. If not, you got to offer him to the club you took him from. In this case, it's the Cardinals, or you can work out some sort of trade to, you know, keep his rights, whatever. The point is, Cade Winquest clearly should not be in the big league roster, but he is on the big league roster. And for that reason, whether it's yesterday's game or, say, you know, the game we lost against Seattle, where Paul Blackburn had to pitch a couple innings. And by the way, Blackburn's actually looked pretty good. He really has. But no, the Yankees have felt, their bullpen has felt one man short. And you basically have a ghost body out there in the pen. And that's in part what led to the Yankees yesterday having to, whether it be run out Jake Bird earlier than anticipated. Again, he was going to get in no matter what. But yeah, we could really use an extra arm up here, whether that's, I mean, say when Quest was out and even in the meantime, you had like a Yerry De Los Santos up here at the big league club. I mean, that would go a long way. Not saying, you know, Yerry's in place of a trade deadline acquisition come July. But in the meantime, again, what I keep coming back to is the bullpen has felt one man short. It technically isn't. But if you're not using Cade Winquest, if he's a non-factor, that's a problem. So while he's only got a few more days left in the roster, he'll be gone. He's definitely getting, you know, DFA'd or whatever the situation is going to be come Friday when Luis Gil returns. But yeah, that's definitely been noticed, his lack of ability to get into a game, or the Yankees' lack of trust in Cade Winquest so far. But yeah, Jake Bird, is there any takeaways to take away from this? That was a good sentence by me. Not yet. No, just one game. Otherwise, he's looked great. Yesterday, not so much. Again, wet-ass game. Wet freaking game. And those often don't ever end well. I'm not making excuses or nothing. But in the end, it is just one loss. We're 7-2. We should have swept. It's a shame we didn't sweep. I will give a compliment to the Marlins team. They're, I don't know if they're going to make the postseason, but they should be in contention. They got a nice squad. They really, really do. With that said, we should have swept them. It's unfortunate that we didn't. But in the end, losses like these are going to happen. And if anything, it really does make it feel like, I think the shine of the opening day vibes always go away rather quickly, and it usually just takes that first loss. But a loss like yesterday kind of reminds you, all right, here we go. Marathon begins. Like, this is now the baseball season. All the hoopla, the hot dogs, peanuts, Cracker Jacks of opening day, that is now like kind of like to the wayside, and it's just, hey, there's going to be times where this team frustrates you, and that goes with every team you watch every single season. And yesterday, no doubt about it, granted the Mariners' loss was frustrating too, That was a tough one. That was a tough one. But we flush it, we move on, and that goes towards Jake Bird. Flush it, move on. I liked his response. I liked his answers. By the way, I wanted to play some sound from Aaron Boone. There was not much that was asked. Now, I understand the logic behind the pinch hitting situation. It would have been nice, though, unless it was asked and I just didn't see it. But on the Yes Network postgame, there was no question asked about that pinch hitting decision. So it would have been nice to hear from Boone about that, to actually get his word on it. But overall, with Bird, he was just talking about, you know, lack of command, and Bird mentioned that himself too. I think we've spent enough time on the bullpen, or at least in regards to the specifics there. We know we need to make a move, whether it's in the meantime with Cade Winquest out, getting the reliever in here before Gil returns, or just some sort of waiver pickup this month or next month. We know the Yankees' depth in their bullpen is lacking, and there will be moves made come July. I have no doubt about that long term. I'm really not worried whatsoever because the Yankees, I assume, will take care of it. I really think they will. For now, though, Cade Winquest or not, we're definitely lacking in the depth department in the bullpen, and that's one of the two issues that remain that we knew going into this year. The other one, we got to talk about this. So you probably know where I'm going here, but I think the other consistent issue we all talked about going into this year, while myself a little more optimistically, but so far it's not working out, the bottom third of the order, they're hitting a combined 128, and I'm not sure who I want to start off with here. Let's just discuss Jose Caballero really quick. You know, he was pinch hit for, and the idea of pinch hitting him was no doubt about it the right move. He's 4-for-31 so far this year. The at-bats, for the most part, particularly as of late, have not looked good. He's, you know, hasn't hit a homer yet, which is fine. You're not looking for him to be a, you know, big-time power source in the lineup. One RBI, does have 3 stolen bases. I want to stick to the offensive side of things, but also the defense for some of these guys. Not Wells, who we'll talk about, but McMahon has made some throws in the dirt. Caballero's arm looks not great. And if you're not going to hit, you got to be a sure thing defensively. He hasn't been bad at shortstop, but there's been a couple plays where it's like, I was under the impression Caballero is a better shortstop than we've seen. And I think he is, but so far he has been a little bit shaky, as has McMahon at third base. I'll tell you, it's crazy how quickly things could change. Now, defensively, I still worry about Volpe, and that's, like we just said, the main thing. You cannot worry about your shortstop. It's got to be one of those things where if a ground ball is hit to him, you can close your eyes and you know he's a rock, he'll make the play. End of story. I will say, I'm already finding myself wondering, what will the vibe be like when we get closer to Anthony Volpe's return, which he should be starting a rehab assignment within probably the next week or so, maybe even this week. I can already feel myself starting to ponder the idea of, well, if Caballero is not going to hit, which is still very early, I know, for all these guys, for everything we're talking about, it's very early. That goes without saying. But if Caballero is not going to hit, well, the return of Anthony Volpe would theoretically be an offensive upgrade. Not by much, but right now the bar is low. Caballero has not been good. It's borderlining on, he's been pretty damn terrible offensively. And the only reason I say it's borderlining is because it is so early. But as we enter this third week here, before you know it, we will have a little bit of a sample size. And before we know it, it'll be the middle of April. It'll be April 15th. And if he's still hitting sub 200 and the at-bats don't look great, don't be shocked if some people really start, to a degree, looking forward to the return of Anthony Volpe. But the main thing is, come his return, we got to have shored up defense. Because while I've been disappointed with Caballero's throws from shortstop, we've talked about it. Some of the double plays we've turned and just Jazz and Caballero up the middle together have looked really good. And we talked about with through some of the double plays, like in the San Francisco series and in the so far this season, a lot of the clean baseball we've played, although this series took a slight step back, which is frustrating. A lot of that has been an aspect I can compliment Caballero on, because his work with Jazz at the middle has been terrific. We got to make sure that remains the case come Volpe's return, assuming he takes over every day, which he will. At this point, barring a breakout from Caballero offensively, Volpe will, no doubt about it, which this was probably already the case, come his return, he is the starting shortstop, and then we'll go from there. For now, though, we'll leave that be, because it's still definitely at least a few weeks away. Ryan McMahon, I don't know what else to really say so far. I had high hopes for him coming into this year, and if you're somebody that's really optimistic about potential improvement out of him, which I understand, I was of the same mindset, and you still can be, but it has not been good so far. The at-bats look brutal. Now, he did have a hit yesterday. He's had a couple walks, some important walks over the last couple of games, so maybe that'll be some nice momentum for him going into the series against Oakland, but they were talking about in the broadcast yesterday how Boone was discussing he's been a little too passive at the plate, which I couldn't agree more. It feels like every time you watch McMahon hit, he's instantly in an 0-2 hole. Instantly. By just taking pitches. And pitches that you feel like he and most big league hitters, if they swung, could crush. Now, he did appear to get a little more aggressive as the series went on, which was nice. But for now, it just feels automatically like, unless he works a nice walk, which I love walks, A Ryan McMahon at bat in 2025 is an automatic 0-2 count, and then we'll see what happens from there. And that usually ends in a strikeout or him just getting out. He's 2-for-23, hitting 087, no homers, two ribs. And those two ribs were from opening day with the two-run single he had, which I was so excited about. So I'm like, yo, here we go. Here we go. New stance, new year. But things can change quickly. And yeah, here we are 2 weeks in, and McMahon does not look any bit improved at the plate. In fact, he looks actually worse. Doesn't mean it's a guarantee he's going to continue to struggle, not by any means, but so far, not great. And Austin Wells, always got to mention how good the defense is, although some of his ABS challenges were pretty bad this weekend. Ben Rice had some bad ABS challenges. The Yankees overall, it was just not a good series with them and ABS, which is very different than what we saw the first couple series. Anyways, though, Wells, well, first of all, I don't know if I'm seeing things, but it does look like he slightly changed his stance. He looks a little more, maybe a little more open and a little more crouched, Wells does in the box. But for him, too, struggling. 4-for-24, 167 average, no homers, no ribs. And yeah, like we mentioned, a combined 128, the bottom third of the order, is hitting. And as we titled this video on this segment, the two biggest concerns so far, it's really the two biggest concerns that remain from the offseason, and in this case from last year, the bottom third of the order really has got to get going. And whether that's the highly discussed on this show, potential third-year breakout finally for Austin Wells, which could still happen, so far it hasn't, or the Ryan McMahon improvement. And as we always talk about, I'm just looking for really one of these three guys, particularly Wells being at the forefront of this, but McMahon, Caballero, I'm really starting to lose that hope for. I just wanted to play good defense. But like, get me to I want a league average bat in the bottom third of the order. Give me a 100 WRC plus from one of these guys. Austin Wells, I think, is the top candidate to do that. But so far, we're getting nothing. It feels worse than the year previous, which is a shame. And not to mention Jazz, which we'll talk about him in a little bit. Two-run double, which was nice. And his home opener game was good. But for the most part, this season, he's given you nothing out of the sixth spot. So the first five guys in the order, I think, have been really good. You know, we'll talk about this in a moment. But Judge, heating up. We know about Ben Rice. We will definitely be discussing him. Stanton. And even Trent Grisham. Little spoiler, but I'll tell you. Grisham in topic four, which is Yankees who are playing great, parentheses, or well. I was, if not for yesterday's game, which was a bad game for Grisham, I was going to put him in that category. Because his OBP, he's been getting on base. He's been walking. The defense looks really good. I've liked, for the most part, what I've seen out of Trent Grisham. And he's been hitting the ball hard. We'll get to that in a moment. Really bad game out of him yesterday. But overall, the first five hitters in the Yankees' order have been pretty damn good. No issues there. Jazz, not great. Pretty damn bad. I don't worry about him long term. I think eventually he'll put up numbers and, you know, he'll run into some homers, and eventually he'll be at least like a threat in the sixth hole and you feel okay about him. Wells, we don't know. Caballero, I think we might know. He can't hit. McMahon, similar. What is certified is the bottom third of the order has been quite brutal so far, and that's something that we're going to need to improve on. Now, short-term, long-term thoughts, the deadline, is there a third baseman out there that the Yankees could be interested in? Well, it certainly ain't the time to mention Matt Chapman, so we'll hold off on that thought, but I haven't done too much, you know, and I doubt anybody has, of a deep dive into what could be available this deadline. For right now, I'm really banking on Austin Wells figuring it out and getting it together. Because if that were to happen, then all right, we're in a much better spot. For now, though, that issue remains. Bottom third, as well as the bullpen. Two things that need to be addressed. And I anticipate at least one of those two will be. With the bullpen, I think we don't got to worry about come the deadline. That will be taken care of. No doubt about it. And not to mention, when you get Rodon back and Cole back, the long-term plan is you'd have Warren and Weathers. Best case scenario, if everybody's healthy, they would go to the bullpen. And that would help out there, of course, too. So, yeah, that's where I'm at in regards to the biggest two concerns so far, the Miami series. We'll kind of put a bow on the negative with that. I want to get into Jason Dominguez, who he is playing really well then in AAA, which is no surprise. He's 11 for 29 with a 379 average, two homers, seven RBIs, and two stolen bases. And actually made a really nice defensive play yesterday in left field. And I saw a tweet that I think is so accurate. It was like, the person was describing Jason and his struggles in the outfield, and they were saying, Jason looks like a competent left fielder when he doesn't have time to think, and I couldn't agree more. Like, when Jason just has to book it after a fly ball, and there's no, I don't know, like, extra, I don't know, like a little fly ball to left, deep, you know, bad towards the wall. I can't think of the word here, but when it's just a pure reaction play, that's where you kind of do see Jason's natural athleticism, and he looks okay in left field. Anyways, though, for now, it is still very much the case. Cannot play defense at a major league level. Offensively, though, he's hitting. And, you know, I wonder about, and this kind of ties back to topic one with the whole JC Escar thing. I have to know the answer here because they want him to get every day at bats. And, by the way, that homer he hit the other day was against a lefty. He's looking better against left-handed pitching so far in AAA. That remains to be seen. Anyways, I wonder if the Yankees would consider bringing him up soon and have him replace Randall Grichuk on the bench. Because no doubt about it, let's say the postseason started tomorrow, or just Yankees want to field their best roster that they possibly can right now. Well, yeah, you want to get him every day at bats, which I 100% understand that. This team would be better with Jason Dominguez on the bench rather than Randall Grichuk. We haven't really seen Randall Grichuk, and we have Goldschmidt, we have Rosario, we have righty options that are threats against lefty pitching already in those two. And, you know, in terms of the totem pole, those two are ahead of Grichuk anyways. Jason, while I know there's many factors, the defense being one of them, in this case, as a bench bat, his lack of ability to hit lefties for right now is not so much part of the conversation because he wouldn't be starting. And yeah, you want him to get every at-bats, and the defense isn't great. That's probably the main one. But in terms of yesterday, for example, instead of J.C. Escar, you could have pinch-hit Jason Dominguez. And we know how lethal he is against right-handed pitching. That is set in stone. That is, last year, he had a 118 WRC plus against right-handed pitching. And while I really like this Yankees bench going into this year, and particularly because Goldschmidt and Rosario, Grichuk, in part because of his role, it's like you don't really see him all that much. One other disadvantage of this Yankee bench is we don't have much speed. Really not at all. I mean, I would say Grichuk or Rosario is probably the, you know, most fleet of foot we've got. Jason Dominguez is quick as hell. We always talk about it. I think Jason Dominguez is probably the fastest Yankee I've seen since 2011, Brett Gardner. So I know my answer with this, where it's like they want him to get everyday at-bats, and that's the way to go. He has things to work on, and it seems like he's improving, at least against lefty pitching. That definitely is seemed to start to come along. The defense is just incredibly frustrating. I don't know what to really say about that, but in my ideal world, and we'll see this kind of, like Jason will obviously be in the postseason roster one way or another. I know it's a ways away, but if we were to like turn our brain off in regards to his development, which is so silly to say, but like the best team possible right now would have Jason Dominguez on the bench. And then when Stanton has to, you know, get a day off, he only plays 5 out of every 7 games. Well, if it's not a lefty, which if it's a lefty, all right, you do it, you DH Goldschmidt, but against a righty, then you should DH Jason. Like I still would see a big time role for him despite being a bench bat. That's just kind of where I'm at. But anyways, just to let you guys know, he is indeed hitting 379 at AAA so far. Also, Spencer Jones hit a grand slam yesterday. We won't talk too much minor league stuff on here right now, but George Lombard in his AA debut, or 2026 AA debut, had 5 hits, a homer. Pretty awesome. Anyways, let's move on to some good stuff. And it's mostly all good stuff. Yeah, I mean, we're 7-2. I wanted to sweep Miami. We didn't. It'll happen. And if anything, it just gets us ready for how baseball season works. It's a test. It's all a test of our patience. And this series, even the games we won, were pretty damn frustrating. Friday was awesome. The home opener was a breeze, and that was a blast. Yankees wearing turtlenecks galore, by the way, which I love. Love. Saturday, though, I mean, that was an awesome game. They fought back. But even that was, that probably took a year off our lives. Yesterday took 5. Let's get to the good stuff, though, because, again, it mostly is all good stuff. And you know what's good stuff? Our first baseman. He's one of the best hitters in baseball. All right, so Ben Rice, first one we got to talk about here. He's 10 for 27 now, hitting 370 so far this season. Yesterday, third home run of the game. Had 2 this series. First, of course, being proud of the series against Seattle. 11 RBIs as well, and he is just smoking the ball. He is, I mean, Judge is obviously number one, and we'll talk about him in a moment. He looked a lot better to begin this homestand. Rice, though, I mean, besides Stanton being as incredible as he's been, and I think that's going to continue, he looks... We'll talk about Stanton, but Ben Rice, forget one of the best hitters in the Yankees. He's going to end up being one of the best hitters in baseball. And I posted it on Yanks Ave that his ascension to being a top 10 hitter in the league is going to be known very soon. And there are some people that are commenting, and I know what they're saying, but they're like, he's been a top 10 hitter, which that's not the case. But they're more so saying, like, Ben Rice has kind of been underrated. Fair, 100%. But we're getting to the point now where it's going to be talked about on a more national level. And like the show that I produce for John Boy Media, Baseball Today, with Chris Rose and Trevor Plouffe, we're going to probably start talking Ben Rice on an individual basis because he is so good. He's going to be one of the best hitters in baseball. Already is, but when I say going to be, I mean like come year's end. I mean, the ceiling for this guy is, I mean, let's, I think first of all, the floor is probably, at least with how hard he hits the ball, assuming he doesn't run into bad luck like he did last year. And so far it's really starting to go well for him in that regard. I think a 900 OPS is the floor. And then we're talking, well, what's a potential ceiling season this year for Ben Rice? I think it's 40 homers. I think the fact that he's hitting ahead of Judge and Bellinger, and Bellinger's been great, by the way, 425 OBP, 892 OPS, looks just like he did last year. Bellinger's been awesome, but you know, with the OBP that we know Judge puts up, Bellinger just mentioned his OBP. Grisham, while the average is low, even after yesterday's really bad game by him. That was the first time I was displeased with Christian, like truly this season. That was a bad game. He still has a 368 on OBP. He's getting on base. I think Ben Rice drives in 100 runs this year. I think he definitely gets to 30 homers, 40 homers is in play. We are witnessing right now the come up, the certified development of one of the best first basemen in baseball. And mind you, the defense, we'll continue to monitor series by series, game by game, but all we can talk about is what we've seen so far. The defense not only looks improved, this series against Miami, he actually looked like a pretty damn good defensive first baseman. So it wasn't even just a thing where, oh, his offense is so good and, yo, he's been proven at first base, we're getting by. He made some nice picks. He made a nice Michael Jordan-esque jump. That's probably an exaggeration, but a jump to save a Caballero airmail. And yeah, the picks, the overall defense, I think he's looked not just competent at first base. So far, he's looked really good defensively. So, I mean, not to be cliche, but it really does feel like at this point, the sky's the limit for Rice. And by that, I mean, I think he's going to be I'd have to rank him, but like a top three, top five first baseman. Are they doing street cleaning right now? It's 8:30 in the morning. What's going on outside? Oh, it's just a bus? Forgive me, yo. Don't go anywhere. I just want to see what's going on. Well, let me move my mic over here. Hopefully you guys can't hear this. Whatever the hell's going by. Anyways, Rice is incredible. Giancarlo Stanton, 13 for 33. Homer, 6 RBIs, and of course, a stolen base, which we'll play on the video end of things in just a moment. The stolen base was insane. Was freaking awesome. And it led to the Yankees scoring a very big run in game two. It's funny. It's cool. It's awesome. Everything that's been said about the stolen base has been said. Overall, though, I want to talk about... Finally, the bus has kind of gone away. He just looks way more athletic this year. He's running. I remember... You all will remember the San Francisco series, I believe it was, when he scored on... I think it was the first run we scored of the season. It was the Jose Caballero RBI single to left field in San Fran. Stanton, we just assumed, was going to stop at third, ends up scoring from second base. And he's been sliding. He's been moving well. He just looks very athletic. And, of course, a stolen base is the headline of that narrative. And, you know, it really goes along with one of the good things we've seen from this Yankee team, which is, more than ever, they look like a baseball team. Now, that we got to continue to see through because I'm seen a few things like the play yesterday with, was that yesterday? No, it was Saturday where I don't even know who to blame. I'm talking about the play at third, which allowed the run to score. It was a bad throw by Bellinger. McMahon seemed out of place. Blackburn didn't back up. Anyways, that was one of those plays and it frustrated me so much because I've been celebrating how much clean baseball we've been playing. And for the most part, that is still the large body work. Majority of this has been clean baseball, refreshing baseball, good fundamentals. That was like all right, hopefully this isn't continuing to become a thing. Yesterday, there was times it felt a little bit sloppy as well, and we'll talk about Jazz in just a moment. We just got to really make sure we keep playing clean, because that's one of the big difference makers between last year's team, or forget last year's team, but like previous Judge era teams, previous Boone era teams, and this one. They look much more fundamentally sound. They look much more athletic. They look much more like a baseball team. And bring this back to Stanton, the way he's looking on the base pass, and just in general, much more athletic, is a big part of that. And so far, so good. Of course, offensively, he's been terrific. As we mentioned, 13 for 33, hitting .394. Judge, first home run of the year, the home opener. This was freaking awesome. Two-run bomb off of Yuri Perez. He looked way better this homestand. He had a double yesterday, which was a bomb. He had a big RBI single to, I believe it was to tie the game. It was the back-to-back RBI singles in game two with Grisham and Judge. It tied the game at 4. So that was clutch. And, you know, he continues to do his thing defensively. We know the arm is back to 100%. That is huge. But we know Judge is going to be fine. And overall in the year, while his stats will go a heck of a lot higher than this, he's at a .250 average now, .853 OPS, 3 homers, 7 RBIs. He also had a stolen base. I believe it was, this weekend as well. He looked like Judge. Not much else to say about that, but we know he's Judge. We know he's going to be fine. If you're worried about him, you know, I respect your opinion, but otherwise don't really know what to tell you. He's Judge. He's going to be just fine. Some other things to note, just some random stuff. We talked about Bellinger. I think he's been really good so far. .425 on base, had his first home run of the season the other day, which I should have video for that. Actually, it's a sound bite, so, you know, we can play. Here's Ballinger's two-run homer from the other day.
1-1. High drive. Right field. Slater back. track. Wall, see ya. A two-run home run from Bellinger. Yankees on the board. They cut the lead in half. It's 4-2.
Yeah, and that was a big momentum boost on Saturday. Led to us taking that game. Bellinger, first home run of the year, and overall, 425 OBP. And the main line I think I have here is just that he looks at the guy that we saw last year. And I'll tell you, man, I'll never not be this way in the beginning of an offseason, because the best player available, you want to go out and get him. Kyle Tucker is a better player than Cody Bellinger. And I'm not, for those on audio only, I'm not putting air quotes around that, but it's like, that is the truth. Kyle Tucker is a better player than Cody Bellinger. But it might just be because this is the situation, and I really do love this team. Even though yesterday's loss, I'm sure, put a damper on some people's feelings, just vibes-wise. Not that anybody's hopping off the bandwagon by any means. If you are, okay, get lost. But no, like, it just feels like Bellinger is the better fit than Kyle Tucker, and I'm so glad they brought him back. I mean, him and Judge are clearly very close, and I love that clip of them during the umpire delay when the home plate umpire was injured, and they come out of the bullpen. All the jokes about, like, the Thanksgiving walk with the cousin, which was, we were all thinking it. But no, it just, the chemistry is a big part of why I like this team so much, and Cody Bellinger's no doubt about it, a big part of that. I like Bellinger. He's a representable Yankee, and I'm very glad we brought him back. And if I could snap my fingers right now and reverse it and have Kyle Tucker in here, I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't do it, which is different than what I was saying earlier in the offseason. I wasn't being, like, some people get, which I know, I guess I used to do this too, and I've had my run-ins with some drama because of this very thing, but, like, some people get aggressive with the Yankees, yo, and listen, I've put holes in the wall. I'm only saying this because it's pathetic and silly. I'm talking about when I was in high school, and it's one of my biggest regrets, but, like, I'm just saying, like, I know I don't have a place to talk, but I think I've matured a little bit. I'm 25 now, turning 26. Like, those days are long gone. Not the passion, but me acting like a jackass. And people just get, like, I was never like that with wanting Kyle Tucker over Bellinger. It was simply, Tucker is the better player. I wanted them to sign him instead of Bellinger. But I'll say right now, I'm glad it didn't happen. And I wonder if those who were just going crazy, like, I don't know, there's just a way some people, some Yankee fans talk. And it's not just Yankee fans, it's people in general. Any take they have, they think they have to, you know, say it so, like, I don't know, like, their shit don't stink and they know all. Which I used to do that too, and one of my biggest regrets is, like, the way I used to talk about the Yankees and stuff. Like, my opinion is no better than anybody else's. Now, obviously, like, I know ball to extraordinary levels, but, you know, I also criticized the Yankees on, the other day, Boone decides to leave Stanton as the pinch runner, which actually ended up being the game where he, I think, was stealing the bases. And I was saying, not aggressively, not like, what are you doing, Boone? You're an idiot. No, like, I was like, I would pinch run Stanton here. And then we heard Girardi explain why Boone wasn't. It was because you might need his at-bat later in the game. And I was like, I mean, we're up by two runs. I'm feeling pretty good about the bullpen right now. Should probably pinch run for Stanton. Well, thank goodness they didn't, because not only, if I'm remembering correctly, that was when he had the stolen base as well, but more so importantly, he later comes back up when the game is tied, because it was a 6-4 game at the time, and then later 6-6 because the Marlins tied it. Stanton delivers a go-ahead two-run single. So I was wrong. Boone was right. But some people, when they think Boone is wrong, which maybe there's times where you're right. There definitely is times where you're right. I disagree with Boone plenty. I disagree with Joe Girardi plenty. I will disagree with whoever the guy is after Boone. That's just how it goes. Go look at how Dave Roberts was discussed by Dodgers fans prior to their World Series winning. Anyways, and it's just like, oh, I was wrong. But some people would be like, if they were feeling like how I was, which was disagreeing with Aaron Boone, it'd be, Boone, what are you doing? You're an idiot, blah, blah, blah. And there's many other examples in that case. The point is more so, I don't know. I feel like some people can just get, like, really, mean isn't the word. That sounds ridiculous. But you know what I'm saying? Just get a little, like, too aggressive with their criticism of the Yankees, and especially before knowing the full picture. Like, if yesterday you still stand by Goldschmidt should have pinch hit, which I 100% think is valid. I think that is a reasonable thought. Absolutely. And you might even be, quote unquote, right. The reason I say quote unquote is it's kind of a subjective conversation. But anyways, at least know why the decision was made, and then let's have the conversation. And by the way, somebody made a really good point about the pinch hitting thing yesterday. They were like, because I was saying about the lefty splits and all this and that, and they're like, all right, well, if Ryan McMahon was the only pinch hitter on the bench, would you have pinch hit him just because he's left-handed? And I'm like, that's a good point. No, I wouldn't have. No, I wouldn't have. But honestly, I feel worse about McMahon than I do a scar off the bench, who I know was 0 for 5 going into the at-bat. But again, like, he's not some bum of a hitter. It's not putting me in there and telling me to bat from the left side. No, like, J.C. Ascar, when he was playing every day in AAA, I'm not trying to make a big point of this, but I'm just saying, like, he's not an incompetent bum. He had an OPS above 900 in AAA. So, I mean, like, the lefty there, I think, was the right move. At the very least, I can understand why he did it. But that's whatever. We're kind of rambling here. Some other notes here. Again, Grisham, I knew this was going to be a hot take going into it if this ended up being the case. It's not. I'm not putting him in this category, which the category is Yankees who are playing great on the topic bar. It's Yankees who are playing great, parentheses, or well. Grisham would have applied to the or well category, and he technically still should be. He has a 368 OBP, which he's our leadoff hitter. That is very important. I know he's hitting sub 200. I anticipate that won't be the case throughout the entire season. And it's still, no matter what, hasn't been perfect. I appreciate the OBP, and that is, you could argue, first and foremost, along with, these kind of coincide with each other, the long at-bats. He's put up really good at-bats. Besides yesterday, Sunday was atrocious, but those days happen. We still haven't seen the power, and that to me is a question. Like, are we going to get 20 homers out of Grisham this year? Are we going to get, you know, last year, of course, he hit 34. If he just keeps working these really long at-bats, and for the most part, really good at-bats, and getting on base, that's ultimately all I need out of Grisham, on top of the defense, which appears to be back to being really good. Grisham, though, because of the game yesterday, I could not keep him in this game. And ultimately, he is hitting under 200, so you want him to step it up a little bit. But, like, the Baseball Savant page loves him so far this year. The expected numbers looking really good. And again, the OBP is the main thing, and the defense we'll talk about with him. Pitching-wise, though, Will Warren, really good second start. He goes, I didn't write that in the line, but I believe it was, what, five and a third, 5 2/3. He looked much better. Command was much improved compared to his first start against the Mariners. Will Warren looked awesome. Ryan Weathers, I've loved his post-game interviews. He's been very accountable, which should be, you know, don't celebrate a fish for swimming. Some of these things are no-brainers on how to handle yourself. But I think Ryan Weathers has handled himself really well. Like, the reporters keep kind of, like, laying out excuses for him. Like, you know, cold night, kind of just like a sloppy day it was on Saturday, too. And it was, I'm saying, like, I wish I could use that excuse, but no, I just wasn't good, and I got to be better. Now, Weathers against Seattle, I thought, was, despite only going 4 1/3 innings pitch, I mean, he struck out 7. I thought the stuff looked really, really good. That was a promising outing. I'm glad we saw that one first than yesterday. Because Saturday. Saturday, he did not look good, really, at all. Now, the fastball still looked fine. I mean, that's one of his best pitches, as is the changeup. The fastball, remember, in spring, we were seeing it get up to, like, 100 miles an hour. And I'm pretty sure that was the same case in Seattle, too. We saw it get up to, like, 100 miles an hour. I could be mistaken, but it was more so like 96. I think he hit 198 against the Marlins. But that's whatever. We're not worrying about Weathers' fastball nor the changeup, but it is something to monitor, like, his ability to put hitters away with, you know, the sweeper, slider, whatever it is, like the breaking stuff. It does kind of feel like he lacks a put-away pitch to a degree. So just putting it out there, just acknowledging that that's, you know, what I'm seeing, what I'm sure some of you guys are seeing, like, kind of just how we feel. Not a determination, not a takeaway by any means. Just, this is what what happened. This is what I saw. Just kind of putting it out there, and then we'll see how he does next start. But for now, it's not even so much been a mixed bag. Ryan Weathers has not been good. But I take that back. It's just, he was not good on Saturday. He just wasn't good. I think against the Mariners, he looked very promising. But we'll see. We'll see. He'll get another start. I guess we'll be pitching against Tampa. But yeah, we'll talk more about the Tampa series, of course, as we go on. By the way, the A's series, we'll preview that entirely tomorrow morning for Tuesday morning show. But yeah, Warren was good. Weathers, we just talked about. Max Fried, although gave up 3 earned runs yesterday, he was still fantastic. The Yankees bullpen was short, as we talked about, and he gave the Yankees 6 2/3. 1.35 ERA for Fried now through 3 starts. So he's been awesome. Some bullpen notes. Fernando Cruz, I think, has looked really good this year. I know he had the walk yesterday, but, you know, that'll happen. Brent Hedrick, I've been very impressed with. I want to make sure I'm not forgetting anybody. Bednar continues to get the job done. It's making you sweat a little bit, but in the end, like, he takes care of business. Oh, Duvall. We didn't even talk about Duvall for number 2. He's been inconsistent. That's my bad. We should have mentioned him. He's a big part of why the bullpen remains a concern, and that's kind of like a sub-factor, third reason of specifically Duvall. Inconsistency, that remains an issue. So we'll see what the deal is there, but that is something to monitor, because if he's going to be bad or just not reliable, then there's I don't say a whole nother conversation to have, but a legitimately like unpleasant conversation to have. Because like we need Duvall to be good. We can't be really thinking about the back end of our bullpen. We know about the depth, and we could use another legitimate elite. I'll take an elite setup man as well at this deadline, and like, you know, a good six inning guy. We'll see what Bird's gonna be long term. Besides yesterday, he's been great. But we know we need depth. Well, if we need like an eighth inning guy, sure, we can get that in July, but we also need Camilo Duvall to be Camilo Duvall at least competently for the next couple of months. And it's been a mixed bag with him, which is not ideal. Anyways, hopefully I'm not forgetting anybody that's playing well. Again, overall, like just good vibes. Good vibes. I mean, I know we lost yesterday, but we got to just flush it. We're 7-2. But also with that said, we'll talk more about this tomorrow. I want to see how this Yankee team bounces back. Not that it's, you know, a pressing matter per se, but it kind of is. These things can change very quickly. You know, I doubt anybody is truly down, generally speaking, because of yesterday. Not the loss itself, but if you were feeling really good about this Yankees team and all of a sudden after yesterday's sloppy-ass game, not even sloppy, but I'm talking about the weather and just, anyways, if that now makes you feel like, oh, same old Yankees, they're going to stink, like, fine, you don't got to watch, I don't care. Like, if that's how you are as a fan, not that you can't watch the show, by all means, do whatever you want, but if you're doom and gloom, if you're somebody that one bad inning, one bad game, automatically it means, oh, Yankees are going to lose. No chance to come back and win this game. I mean, we saw it even on Saturday, yo. Like in my live chat for the watch parties, which we've had some amazing watch parties. I love you all to death, by the way. It applies to like very few. But like we go down 2-0 in the first, or like 4-0 to Miami. People are like, yeah, we're not losing this game. Or we're not winning this game. It's like, do you actually feel that way? Or are you just lowering your expectations so you don't get hurt? Which if so, I think that is not the way to live. Not the way to live. Because I am, when I'm watching a game, still going to hold that hope until I don't have the choice that the Yankees will win today. The Yankees will bounce back tomorrow. The Yankees will get back to a clean brand of baseball and just, you know, winning games, dominating games. In the end, they took the series 2 out of 3 from Miami. So with all that said, we're chilling. Vibes are still high. But quickly, things can change to where if you lose a series opener against the A's, then it's like, all right, well, you really better bounce back on Wednesday in game 2 and make sure you don't lose this series because again, things can change quickly. But for now, we're still riding high, 7-2, despite the loss yesterday. Let's wrap it up with this. And normally, this is not how I like to organize the show because, you know, I want to, in part, to keep myself accountable as a shill, always go, you know, like today we opened technically negative with the first two topics. And then Jason, that's a positive topic. That's an exciting topic. The Yankees who are playing great, obviously, that's optimistic. But I always want to make sure I kind of go back and forth between the positive and the negative, assuming, you know, the way they're playing allows me to do so in that manner. We're finishing with a negative topic here, but it's one that goes along with how I always talk about Jazz, which is he frustrates me so much, and it's because he can be so good, and he is so good. But little things like what we saw on Saturday night, was that Saturday? Yeah, Saturday night, where ground ball to second. Well, let's just play the clip. You guys all know what I'm talking about, but particularly take a listen to, we'll hear a couple sound bites from Jazz here. The post-game interview was terrible. Terrible. Take a listen, and then we'll talk about it.
Ground ball, Jazz Chisholm right there. Takes his time, and you know what? Took too much time. Lopez beat it out.
Play last night in the ninth inning, did you feel like you had to say anything to the team just about the defensive play in the ninth?
No. I mean, we all know how I play baseball, how we play baseball. The guy caught me with my head down, and he did a good play on him. I mean, I do it to other teams all the time. So I feel like someone caught me, it's no big deal to me. You know, I, if I was him, I would do it too.
All right, Zach Wilson. All right. And that's actually like the least bothersome thing of the whole thing, which for those who don't know that aren't Jets fans, the Zach Wilson comparison is when he had a really bad game, he was asked, do you feel like you let the defense down? And he's like, no. And he just sounded like a punk doing it. I'm talking about Zach. And honestly, Jazz in this case did too. I didn't like the response. But that's not what you want to talk about. But to go back to like the Jake Bird interview or any Yankee, I mean like hearing Camilo Duvall the other day or really anybody when they do something not great, poor performance, whatever it may be. Please, if anybody's willing to take a 1 second advice from Dan Rourke, one of the most effective lines in the history of humanity is, it won't happen again. That's what we heard Jake Bird say. And what was my response after playing his sound clip was, all right, fair enough. That's all I need to hear. I'm telling you, it won't happen again. I mean, that's the Yankees won the a postseason series against Boston last year. Giancarlo Stanton had a double, great vibes, and after a win to advance to the next round of the postseason, he was saying it won't happen again. It's a very, very effective line, and for obvious reasons, it shows accountability. In regards to his response to that play, it's a layup in that regard. You messed up. You messed up. Now, what actually just drove me insane, and the play, for those listening along, I mean, we all know what this was by now, but if you don't, it was routine ground ball to second base. Jazz, I don't know if he bobbled the ball a little bit, like maybe he had a poor grip, so I can try to give him the benefit of the doubt there. But even if that were the case, he threw a rainbow to first base, and the runner ended up beating it out. And he was saying, it's like he was complimenting the opposing player who beat it out for taking advantage of him being lackadaisical, with my head down. Well, what do you mean with your head down, bro? Like, this isn't a thing where, all right, your head's down, so you're unaware of what's going on. It's not a thing where you should feel the play the right way, throw to first with urgency just because, oh, the guy's booking it down the line. Like, no, it's a ninth inning, it's a close game, throw the freaking ball. Simple as that. And it's just one of those things with Jazz that it does drive me insane. And it's, you know, some people get, I understand why, but when you criticize Jazz, there are some people who think you're going at it from an angle that is not right, which if you are going at it from that angle, then you're a loser, and obviously you deserve to be called out. But we also got to remember here, some people just want to see the Yankees win. Some people just want to watch a representable team play the game the right way, and this is a very representable team. Jazz, when he's playing well, he is the second best second baseman in baseball, which is why this irritates me so much, because little things like that are why he's that tier below where he should be. And this has nothing to do with his slow start. Jazz struggles offensively to begin seasons a lot. Cold weather, he's not great. And I'm not worried about his... I think come year's end, Jazz, we're looking at a 120 WRC+, an OPS at or near 800. And the defense at second base is really, really good. Jazz is an exceptional player. Can be an exceptional player. He's a really good player. I think he'll put up a 4 WAR this year. It's not about that, but he could be a 6 WAR player. He could be somebody that we want to bring back in free agency next year. But things like that, or last year, forgetting the ounce, or... Dude, it's... The Boston series last year, too, I mean, like, I bring this up a lot. It drove me insane, turning your back on the media after not getting the start. I mean, that is... I know I'm not the epitome of maturity, I guess. Like, my... what I... But it's like, come on. Now Judge has to address it, and now it's a thing. And, like, his response yesterday, while it's already kind of a crap show with how bad that play was in itself, you could just say after the game, it won't happen again. But he just has like a, it's a little attitude to it. And I definitely think he, not thinks he's better than he is. I think he knows how good he is. And the way I would describe it is knows how good he can be, but we don't always see it. Sometimes we do see it and it's amazing. Jazz can be an incredible base, and he is. He is. He's one of the best second basemen in baseball. At his best, he's the second best in all the sport, next to Ketel Marte. But it's like little things like that, whether it be the play or the way he handles himself, it does bother me. It does bother me. And it can be, it's like the highs with Jazz are very high, the lows are very low. Like the highs, and this applies to his media personality too. Like when things are going well with Jazz, oh, I love him to death. When he first got here, I think he's fantastic with the media. It's like when Jazz is in a good mood, good spirits, oh, he's terrific. When he first comes over, like the way he was talking about Judge, calling him Cap, and he's just awesome. And I think like last year, the torpedo bat thing, and he's wearing the sunglasses. I ended up buying a pair because I thought he looked so cool. And he just, like, Jazz is awesome. But it's like he hurts his case by the way he handles himself. So the play is one thing, which normally I'd be like more about the media side, which I know that's the angle I'm taking here too. But the play is obviously inexcusable too. It's one thing to, you know, say, I keep going back to Jake Burr, but he's today's example. Like, be bad and then be accountable. All right, like, what more can you say? Like, I always talk about on here, and Kay will mention a similar point where it's like, I can't criticize performance. I can't stand, you know, like, I always talk about Dan Rourke Sr. He's basically a quasi-hitting coach from the couch, and he truly does know what he's talking about. But like, I always say back to him, it's like, all right, that's great. I don't think you're wrong, but like, it's not my place to talk hitting. It's not my place to talk about why Jazz Chisholm Jr.'s swing is off, or why, you know, Jake Bird's command was, like, it's just not my, I mean, Jake Burr, I can freaking spin the ball, chat, so maybe I can talk pitching. No, I'm just kidding. Which, by the way, Captain's League, I'm on the bump tomorrow for the for the nasty on warehouse games. But anyways, effort is a different story. Because I can show effort. You can show effort. And it's not a matter of Jazz being lazy. I think he just has these mental lapses sometimes. And yesterday or Saturday was an example of that. And it's frustrating. It really, really is. And it's so frustrating because how great he can be. And how great often he is. But more than even that, the response in the postgame just bothered me. And I just think that part's so easy, man. So easy. Like, Jazz is, I mean, this isn't even up for debate. Like, Jazz obviously is a good person. He's a great guy. It's a very simple ability to be able to just flip a switch and turn on professional mode, turn on, or like turn on the accountability switch. Can't happen again. That's what should be said. Now, I do anticipate it won't happen again. Boone talked about it. You know, he kind of said the whole same vibe. I mean, I anticipate that won't be an issue going forward. And maybe this is a thing that is a good thing for to have happened because it happened early in the year. We'll leave it there. I do want to mention and play one more soundbite from Jazz. Of course, had the 2-run double last night. This was a really good at-bat. And again, I think he's going to put up numbers. Like, I think the OPS will be, at the very least, come season's end, like above 750, possibly near 8. Last year, he was at like an 8. I think he had an 830 last year. So in all likelihood, I think he's going to be there numbers-wise. I don't worry about that with Jazz. And he did have a really nice at-bat last night to bring it to within 1 in the 9th, 2-run double. That was awesome. I want to play his soundbite. And this actually kind of feels like I'm just piling on now a little bit. I didn't really love this interview either, but I do know what he was saying. So here's Jazz just talking about his John Heyman asked a question about his offensive struggles so far.
Anything you'd pinpoint as to why you haven't performed quite like you normally do so far this year? Now it's early.
I mean, it's early. We're 6-7 games in. I go 4-4 tomorrow, you wouldn't say that. You know what I mean? So for me, it's just rolling with it right now. Getting things right. Even when I hit it hard, it wasn't falling either. So at the same time, you know, it's playing baseball, you know. You roll with it, come back the next at-bat, and just try and do it again.
Correct, Jazz. If you go 4-for-4 tomorrow, we won't be talking about it. Yes, you are correct. I know what he's saying there. I know what he's saying. That interview was like kind of whatever. But just since we're on the topic of it, he does have just like this attitude about him sometimes where it's kind of like, yeah, like my crap don't stink type situation, and almost in like a condescending voice, which it might be because John Heyman asked a question, you know, and I understand if Jazz is already kind of like, you know, has a certain perception when he's asked a question, and maybe by somebody like Heyman, I don't know, where naturally he's a little more defensive. I 100% get all that. So I'm not going to make too much of that interview, but more so to bring it all home. Well, that play is one thing. That is whatever. But the struggles, he's going to be fine, I think. Like, Jazz is going to start hitting. I really, really think that. And that's not even a hot take. I don't even got to say that, honestly. I don't think the media stuff is this hard with Jazz. Like, no, don't turn your back on the media, even if you are pissed about not playing in a wildcard game against Boston, which, yeah, you should have been in that lineup. I agree with you. I understand why you're pissed. Don't turn your back on the media, though. That play the other day, you know you messed up. Say it. Say it. Because whatever you say doesn't change the fact that you did mess up. And a lot of times that's something that you can apply in a positive way, and that's kind of what he's doing with the struggles in that interview, saying, well, if I went 4-for-4, you wouldn't be saying that. Like, I do know what he's saying with that. I was kind of kidding when I said, like, yeah, go for 4-for-4 tomorrow. We won't be talking about it. Like, it's baseball, one good game, one bad game. When talking about struggles, like, the long-term concern would be the overall body of work come season's end. With a guy like Jazz, at least for me, I don't worry about him putting numbers up at year's end. So I understand that. But in the case of the play, it's like, what is, yeah, you messed that up big time, and that can't happen again. So knowing that's the case, I don't want to say take the high road, like take the obvious road and say can't happen, won't happen again. And I would like to think he did say something, at least Judge or Boone, like my bad, Skip, along those lines. But the point is, as we wrap up here, Jazz can be so much better. He is great. He just, because he's so great, can be so great, frustrates me to no end. And I really am curious how this will play out in his free agency in general with the money he's going to get from whoever. And whether or not that'll be from the Yankees. And my opinion right now, I think little things like that are why it won't be. I mean, I know those things drive the Yankees crazy. Like, I'm telling you, I don't know this per their word or anything. But I know what he did against Boston last year, turning his back in the media. Like, that's the sort of thing that the Yankees don't play around with that, yo. Like, Jason Zillow, he was probably beat red when that was going on, in anger. Like, they don't play with that whole thing. They'll tell you about Clint Frazier Not that Jazz is in that world or in that like side of things, but it's just frustrating. It's just frustrating. Like, but let's just keep it to the play there. I mean, that just can't happen. I anticipate it won't happen again. But they did win that game. They did win that game. And in the end, took 2 out of 3 against the Miami Marlins, who I'll compliment them on their play. They look pretty good, and I think they might be in contention this year. I got major beef, yo. I used a fake logo for the Marlins this series. And the way it was fake, if you notice, it's the Marlins logo, what they're currently using, but I used one off Google that had, like, teal instead of blue, because I was really hoping at one point, once, we would see the teal uniforms, and we didn't. I don't know why that's the case. I don't know why they don't just wear them all the time. In my opinion, I think by next year, they're going to be fully in commission every game. Main uniforms for the Marlins. But no, 2 out of 3 against Miami. Still a W in the end. Got a flush yesterday. Already have flushed yesterday. Psh, done. Gone. See you later. Guys will bounce back. And if they don't, we'll discuss it then. For now, nothing to panic about. Nothing to not be extremely excited about. The Yankees look good. For the most part, we've played clean baseball. Guys are starting to hit. The pitching still remains outside of the bullpen yesterday. And Jake, really just Jake Bird, which is fine. One bad game. Outside of that, like, pitching remains really good. The defense, I'm still impressed with overall. But you want to make sure, you know, we keep up a nice, clean brand of baseball. And the guys, some of the guys that aren't hitting yet, particularly like Jazz, who we talked about, not worried about him. The bottom part of the order, though, remains a concern. We'll continue to monitor that. And everything we talked about, I'm not going to recap the entire show. But bottom line is we're 7-2, which has a 3-game lead for us in the American League East. Yanks are off today. A's are in town tomorrow. We'll have another Morning Yankee show tomorrow morning live at 8 a.m. And, yeah. We'll continue to talk, you know, programming schedule, but of course, watch parties on the main channel for every game of the A's series. Also, reminder, the one day a week we won't have watch parties is Sundays. So every game we will be live for on the main channel for watch parties, unless it is a Sunday game. Sunday's when I go back down to my dad's house and, you know, possibly watch a game with my boys, watch a game with him, do my laundry, that sort of vibe. So unless it's a Sunday, there always will be, unless I let you know otherwise, a watch party on the main channel. Morning Yanks. I'll see you guys tomorrow morning. Remember, we're on podcast too. So Apple, Spotify, I upload it right away after we wrap up here on YouTube. So, and if you are listening on that, you know, give it a 5 stars or however that works. Rate, review, all this and that. Click like in the stream, subscribe, all this and that. Hope you guys have a fantastic start to your week. Have a amazing Monday, and I will see you tomorrow morning as we preview Yankees A's. See you guys later. Let's go Yankees.